Hello there, and welcome to the Comic Book Tesseract, the weekly comic sitecast that's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. I'm Jason Polia. Every week we review and preview the world of comics, along with other facets of geek chic culture. Justin's going to be adding a supplemental podcast this week, so don't forget to check your feed readers or head on over to thecomicbooknerd.com to check out his counterpoint to this. Gonna go ahead and start us off with Unwritten. This is a book that's continuing to run strong throughout the series. I still say go back a couple of issues, pick up from number 35 or so, where they launch off on this new story arc, because it's the whole story arc has taken a left turn from where it had been going in the original storytelling. It's a continuation of that story, but it jumps ahead a couple of months in the telling, and this is now starting to reveal some of the mysteries that had been going on and some of the histories that were told in that first 35 or so issue run. So Unwritten continues to be strong, continues to have some great artwork and great telling, some really interesting ideas. And if you're not interested in a superhero comic book, this may be what you want, because it's not a traditional it's not a superhero comic book, really. It does have magic and abilities, and you know, there are hints of a Harry Potter-esque type character. There's hints of the childhood stolen, such as the real Christopher Robin had by his father, A.A. Milne, who wrote the Peter Pan books, using his son Christopher as the Christopher Robin in those books. So there's elements of all that. It's not a traditional story. It's about the myth and majesty of storytelling and how that affects the world around us. So continuing with strong storytelling and strong things going on in that book. So I suggest picking it up. I think it's a great read. Couple of other things to look at this week. Justice League. I'm still not impressed with Justice League. I've seen better stuff from Geoff Johns. Jim Lee's artwork is still very good. If you're a fan of Jim Lee's artwork, you're going to like it throughout. And he's staying on target with his getting the books out on time, so that's good. The backup story for this, also written by Johns, with art by Gary Frank, is actually really good. And that's the part that's actually keeping me coming back. This has been a blockbuster movie where there's just big action sets and sequences, but nothing really tying and holding it strongly together. They tried to tie this to the original arc through the character who's now the main villain. It hasn't worked for me, and this issue really explains a lot of the stuff that should have been explained in the previous issue. And it also, you know, the way that the previous issue ended, this one steps in and goes, nothing really of consequence mattered, because of the way that they had the villain just leave without actually attacking or killing the Justice League. They never defend their way out of it. It's a poor way for the heroes to have to behave. And then there's a big fight going on there when there shouldn't be, amongst the heroes. And it strikes of, we're trying to do things that we think are going to be big and exciting, and we're not thinking it through on how to actually tell a good story. They're trying to tell set pieces instead of stories. However, the backup story with Shazam, which is finally taking a huge turn that we knew it would. So that is worth picking it up for, as they're reintroducing Shazam, formerly Captain Marvel, into this. Yeah, that's one of the big changes, is they're no longer going to be calling the character Captain Marvel. They're going to be calling him Shazam, and that we'll touch on in a little bit. But it was DC's decision, because most people know him as Shazam. Shazam was in fact the Wizard, who at least so far has only been referred to as the Wizard. We'll see if the Wizard also is known as Shazam, or if it's merely, or if they're going to just refer to him as the Wizard and now name the character Shazam. Another book that I'm going to go ahead and mention because it's worth mentioning, Exo Man of War, the Valiant flagship title that they've relaunched with. Issue number 3 came out, still continuing to be a great story. It's going to be interesting now they've kind of wrapped the first major steps in the arc, and they've brought him home, which is what he's always wanted, to go back home to see his family. Well, he's back home. So now we're going to see where this little arc is going. And hopefully soon we'll start to see it branching out and developing its own story, its own rhythms, its own arcs, after having been in the footsteps of the original Exo series. The other piece with this is we start to see the powers of the suit and just what it can do. And it's a pretty mean suit. It's a very strong, very powerful suit, which it starts to step it into the zone of a Superman character where if you have all this power, it's no longer interesting because there's nothing that can harm you. There's nothing that you can't fight off. So with no weakness, when you have all the strength and powers that you need, how do you create an interesting story behind that? So it'll be interesting to watch to see how they develop on that angle with this as well. Again, solid storytelling throughout this. So go ahead, pick up Exo Man of War. Hopefully your shop still has it. If not, maybe they can get a reprint, because I'm pretty sure it's gone into issue one has gone into reprints. Issue two may have as well. So check that out. Otherwise, you might be waiting for a trade, which with Valiant being so new, I don't know if they're going. They should, but I don't know if they will be doing trades. So go ahead, try and get your shop to get those for you. And last major one that is just kind of a continuing story is Saga. And this, with issue 5, is a long arc story. They've made some interesting revelations, interesting changes. We're getting some more character development. We're getting to see who these characters are and just what their limits are when they get pressed to do things that they don't necessarily want to do, how these characters react and where their breaking points are, where their bending points are. So, Saga, Brian K. Vaughan has done an amazing job. It's out there. Picking up issue 5, you look at it and it's a guy dressed partly like a king, partly like an archduke, and partly, and with the head of a television. Well, his head is a television, actually. It's a very interesting meld of the creatures in this world of technology creatures, and it's a story, technology versus magic. There's a love story behind all this. So it's interesting to see where this is going. It's just off the wall enough that you're going, I don't know where he's going with this. So it's done magnificent. The artwork in this is stellar. And there's some couple of interesting changes that make you go, where's that going to lead? Not necessarily that they were fully unexpected or things that you never would have gone, oh, well, I never expected that to happen to that character. But there are certainly moments where you're going, well, where's this going to lead to now? Or that person's not going to like that. What are they going to do about it? How is that going to change what they're actually doing, where the purpose is? There's a lot going on in this book. It's interweaving itself. There's a lot of tales that are going to be twisted together to see where this all goes. It's just great storytelling. So fully enjoying Saga. If you're not getting it, it's one of those comics that you should be. Yeah, just because it's different from your traditional straight up comic books, which are mostly the superhero genre. Particularly if you're tired of a superhero genre, Saga is something to be looking at for something different, a different flavor of a comic book. And it's storytelling that really does and can only be done in comic books. It's too bizarre and out there. You get the visual references, particularly from Fiona's art, that make it look spectacular. But it's really way out there that you'd never be able to find an audience for something like this on television, which it's kind of sad, but because this is great storytelling, but television audiences can't react to basic sci-fi. It's hard enough to keep a show like Star Trek or even a fantasy show or like Buffy going on for long periods, and they tend to have smaller audiences. So you're not going to see something like this done for a television show. I mean, look at the dinosaur show that they had on Fox, Terra Nova. It's just not in the general public's wheelhouse to be able to read a story like this. And this is a bit further out than even something like Terra Nova. So comic books are the greatest place to put something like this. And they're really taking advantage of the medium. Gonna bounce on over to the Marvel's big placement book this week, Avengers vs. X-Men, their crossover. There's an interesting development that goes on in this book, and I'm going to try and keep it spoiler-free. I'm not enjoying this crossover a whole lot. They've definitely done some interesting and surprising things going on in here. This was a book that was more aimed at, just trying to solidify some of the decisions that they made earlier. And we've talked about how, Scott and the Phoenix Five were presenting themselves as messiahs. Now they're starting to show cracks in that armor as they're not necessarily the saviors of the race of Earth, but are in fact actually dangerous to it. And the Avengers are going after them because of that. The Avengers are actually, trying to do hit and run tactics because they're stuck where they can't really defeat this enemy. They've got to think it out and have a full-fledged attack plan to try and defeat the Phoenix Five. Meanwhile, the world, which was sure, is looking at the events that go on in this book and are now starting to question things. So it certainly has been an interesting ride. Unfortunately, a lot of this book has been, at least for my tastes, poorly executed. Bendis has actually done a pretty good job of scripting this book. And yeah, unfortunately, not all of the books have been as strongly written as this one has. So enjoying it, I'm just not as much as I should be for a big crossover event. It's not leading me where I'd love it to go. Actually, I'm not sure where I'd like it to go, but it's not as compelling as I was kind of hoping. And this being the book that's leading into the Marvel Now campaign, where they're going to be relaunching a number of their titles. Although they said that it's not going to be a reboot, that the characters will be continuing from where they are. This is going to be leading into that event, which starts October through February and runs through February, where they relaunch a whole bunch of titles. Told you last week about a number of the books that they've already announced being retired, which not necessarily retired. A lot of those will probably just end, and then next month you'll have, or even 2 weeks later in some of them, you'll have a new number one out, continuing that story arc. But the other big thing that you've got from Marvel is Captain Marvel number one, which I'm guessing since they've gone ahead and launched this book, it's not going to be part of the new, of the Marvel Now initiative and relaunched very soon because it's starting off right now. Pick this up and not as familiar with Captain Marvel as I am with other characters in the Marvel Universe. Of course, the original Captain Marvel in the Marvel Universe is Mar-Vell, a Kree alien. They actually touch on that in this book, which is one of the things that I liked and they did well, is they started off showing you in continuity of the new Captain Marvel, which is Carol Danvers, in her, well, she's refusing to take the role of Captain Marvel. She's got a new costume, but she doesn't want to be called Captain Marvel. She feels that that is actually Captain Marvel's name. She's Miss Marvel. And, of course, actually real quick, since I mentioned it before, DC has their own Captain Marvel. He's now going to be known as Shazam. That does, a lot of people think that removes some legal tie-ups that they may have been having between Marvel and DC about the name Captain Marvel and who could use it and why. So, yeah, DC's gone ahead and renamed their character Shazam because they feel that's what the public knows the character as. And thus it won't be confused with the new Captain Marvel that Marvel Comics has just come out with. And it makes sense for Marvel Comics to have a character named Captain Marvel. But back to what goes on in this book, it does a great job of melding the continuity of what's been going on through Avengers books and melding that into a introductory book, a book that somebody that hasn't been reading the Avengers can pick up and go, okay, here's Captain Marvel, here's Captain America, they're talking, and he's trying to convince her that she needs to change her name from Miss Marvel to Captain Marvel. Why? At one point they do a retrospective and you get to a brief introduction of, how she acquires her powers, her little backstory, if you will, as she contemplates using or not using the name. So there's some interesting, some pensive moments of her thinking about it. And they do a great job of just showing you what's in this character's head as she goes through these emotions, trying to figure out, should she or should she not take on the name Captain Marvel? Or is it just for, or should she stay as Miss Marvel? and then it leads you right into the big arc that's going to be fulfilling the next couple of issues, as well as it both is a current time story as well as a little bit of a history about the Captain Marvel character and what she does and where she comes from as far as a history for the character. So I think as an initial book, it's done really well in introducing me to the characters and the character of Ms. Marvel's Captain Marvel, and the things that are kind of going on in her head as to who she is. And it's going to spend the next couple of issues, yeah, explaining to me who this character really is. And hopefully it'll dig deep and they'll continue the examination of who she is and what it means for her to be Ms. Marvel and now Captain Marvel. Marvel's done a really good job with reintroducing this book. Kelly Sue DeConnick, who wrote it, did a great job. And the art, by Dexter Soy is rather interesting. It actually has a couple of different feels throughout, which is really good, to see how he changes up, in his coloring and the presentation of the art. It's a bit grittier at the beginning when they're in an all-out battle and then gets to a smoother, a better place, towards the end. I don't want to say a better place, that's wrong. But just a smoother, more comfortable, more relaxed, less frantic feel as it gets towards, the later half of the book. So he makes the art feel like that section of storytelling should. And so does a great job with the art in there. Really enjoyed the book. It's got a beautiful, pinup page, in the middle of it, which is actually part of the story. So they did a great job in creating that pinup slash story art right in the middle of it. And then lastly this week, is Batman Beyond Unlimited, which is the, Batman Beyond Universe, which is not the, traditional DC continuity, and it's not the DC New Universe continuity. Most of this book actually focuses on the Superman of the future and the events that have been going on, that have been leading up to that. We've been following this story for the past couple of issues. And so there's a couple of interesting things and a real interesting, turn at the end of that story, which I'm interested to see where that goes, as it reintroduces a character from the past, and it's nice to see who this person is. It also continues the, future version of the Justice League's adventure, as they try and defend Earth from Apocalypse or Apocalypse from being destroyed. It's definitely become an interesting story. They've done some interesting things with the New Gods characters, such as Darkseid and Orion. They're really playing with some interesting stuff here. And yeah, without really going in and talking plot details, I've really been enjoying actually all of the stories in here. Actually the thing that kind of had me a little bit upset is the fact that Batman Beyond, who of course the book is named after and is the main character, his story in here actually seemed rather short. They do have a little bit, and it's continuing the arc that they've been telling in the previous couple of books. But overall, they dedicated very little page space to the actual Batman Beyond character solo. Which, while that is a little bit of a disappointment, being that it's entitled Batman Beyond Unlimited, it's nice to see that they're actually changing up the story flows and that, for instance, this book is mainly dominated by the Superman story arc. And then they go to the Justice League story arc and they finish it off with the Batman arc. And both the Justice League and the Batman arc are smaller in scale, as the Superman took center stage here. What's been happening is they've kind of been rotating what that front and center stage story is each month. It actually paid off in this one for what they have happened in the Superman story. So if they continue with that, where they can let a story that they want to have lead, and have big reveals in that, and, or even, a big start or a big finish to an event occur in the main story. And then the two supplementals just kind of keep those flowing so that they can then move them into another, yeah, into the next arc, and then maybe the following issue, Justice League, or will be the main issue, and Batman will still have a smaller story, and Superman will have a smaller story. And then the following, it could be Batman is back to being the big main story. They're just allowing them a couple of pages, you know, six or so pages, to advance their story just a little bit, so you can remember, hey, these people still have stuff going on there. It also is great because it's like getting three comic books in one, even though they're not full length comic books. It still gives you that kind of feel of, you know, I'm reading more than one story, so you get a lot more fulfillment and enjoyment out of this than you do from just buying a single book with a single story. With that, I'm going to go ahead and head on into my review of Batman The Dark Knight Rises. Of course, this movie just came out, and I'm going to try and do a spoiler-free review. I think I can do that. I do want to spend a moment and offer our condolences to the victims of the Aurora, Colorado shooting. And it's sad that, you know, people went for an enjoyable night out to go see something, and these were big fans that were going to, you know, see something that was very important to them because they're catching a midnight showing, and to have it ruined, and to have, you know, friends and family who are now in mourning for their missing loved ones and friends. It's just a horrible tragedy to mar the opening of a movie that is about, you know, the rise and redemption of people and about good overcoming. And so it's a sad beginning to this. And it, unfortunately, people are going to focus on a lot on the gunmen and, you know, try and bring about change because of that. I'm going to go ahead and just go into the Dark Knight Rises review. The movie is a flawed masterpiece. It's, I think, not quite as good as the second of the, Christopher Nolan Batman movies, Batman the Dark Knight. But it is still a good movie. It did have its flaws. Most of them are in a overthought plot. They thought too hard on trying to put it together. There were some interesting, things that take place in the telling of the story. Bane at points reminds me of the Heath Ledger Joker, not in the way that he acts, but in his planning and the plot that they put out there for him, the story that he's trying to tell, and, you know, who he is as a person as to why he's attacking Gotham. There are elements in there of the Joker, which, unfortunately, I think Heath Ledger and the Joker raised the bar to a point that this movie could not have reached it. But it's still a good movie. And, you know, I could make the argument that it's better than Batman Begins. So, if you're looking for a good time, I think it's worth seeing. It's not the enjoyable summer blockbuster. I don't think it's going to actually beat Avengers. That one is not as dark, it's not as gritty, which this definitely is. Whereas the Avengers, it's a more fun movie. It's a movie that I can see parents bringing their kids to more readily than this Batman movie, even though they're both PG-13. The Dark Knight is definitely a darker feel. It's got a bit more of action and fight sequences going on in here than the previous Nolan movies have had. But it works with the story, so that's good. Again, I just think they were overthinking it, trying to make it a bit more complex than it needed to be. For the comic book fans that are going to go out there and see this movie, they're, particularly if you're familiar with the Bane story and, you know, the original incarnation of Bane in the comic books, there are hints at that. And maybe that's part of the reason why I felt the Joker, because the Joker was a bit more grandiose in his plan in The Dark Knight, that Bane here, which he did do, you know, did have a plot and a plan and was thinking, which is something that they didn't do in the Schumacher movie, and that Bane has been as a character, why he's been so dangerous for Batman as a foe in the comic books. is that he's a foe that can think. So I'm glad they took that. There are other elements of the Bane character on the, and the Bane storylines that are shown in here. So, with that all going on, yeah, as a comic book fan, I didn't feel like they changed it too much. Being this is the Nolan universe, you know there's going to be changes and things going on in this world that have resonate differently than from the traditional Batman universe. And certainly the way that this ends, it meets up with those, with that kind of clash of, it's not like it was in the comic books. And it, if you go in there expecting it to follow strict Batman comic book guidelines, you're going to come out disappointed. It hits on the high points and the feel of a lot of the things that go on there. But in the end, it is not going to be a Batman that can be in the current DC universe. It changes things up just enough that this is Nolan, this is his vision, and this is his Batman, and that's where it ends. I was a little bit skeptical of Anne Hathaway being cast as Catwoman. I didn't think she had the athleticism. She does a wonderful job. Movie magic makes it look great. And the way that they portrayed the character of Catwoman in here, she's been portrayed this way in some of the comic books. Of course, you follow the character of Catwoman, you know she's changed over the years, very different methods of who she is and you know, what her motives are. I felt they did a good job with Catwoman in here. Overall, really liked the movie. I don't know that it's a movie that people are going to go back and watch again and again like they did with The Avengers. I don't think it's going to catch that as far as box office, even though I think it, if I'm pretty sure it had the bigger opening night. So, it, overall, if you're a Dark Knight fan, definitely need to see it. If you've enjoyed Christopher Nolan's Batman movies, absolutely go see it. If you, are a Bane fan, a Catwoman fan, go see it. If you're a comic book fan, you probably need to see it in theaters. If you haven't liked what Nolan's done, you're not going to like this one either. But if you've been okay with how Nolan's treated the character, you're still going to love it. It may not be as good as The Dark Knight, but I think you'll appreciate it and be able to enjoy it, and it will still be considered a good movie for you. Moving on into one other thing that I'd mentioned last week, which was Sunset, which is a graphic novel. I talked about a dollar issue that they'd put out, which was the first chapter of Sunset that came out last week. It's a black and white crime noir graphic. It actually, as they refer to it in the introduction of the graphic novel, it's geezer noir. And they actually, I compared it to Gran Torino and the introduction, and actually the pitch for it also referenced Gran Torino as the type of feel. Having read this, I just wanted to put it in an envelope, mail it off to Clint Eastwood and go, this is the next movie that you're doing with Morgan Freeman. Cause that's what I felt. I think it'd be a great movie to see that, with that cast and with Eastwood as the main character, Nick, and, He's got a friend Sully who I just thought of Morgan Freeman in it. There is a little bit of a hint. I don't know. When I was looking through it, there's a flashback to Army boot camp. And maybe it's just me, but I could swear that the drill sergeant looks like Arlie Ermey. There's one other similar piece in the artwork where I'm looking at it going, that looks just like, and maybe I caught all those. Maybe there's more that I didn't see. Maybe it's just me putting my own spin on it. I talked about Jorge Lucas's art before, and it looks like a color photograph put on a black and white printer that's been set to high contrast, so it's black on white with almost no gray at all. And it just looks amazing because everything looks blown out. Things are just look like they've been burnt in there. It's a great art. It has a great feel for a noir story. And, it was just a filling story. It actually was, it's not a full comic book size. It's actually a shorter book. It's out in hardcover right now. Actually pretty good price too. really enjoyed it. And yeah, I read right through the whole thing a lot faster than I thought I would. At the end, they've got some character descriptions and the character designs that they were originally looking at when they made the proposal. It has the actual original proposal. It's interesting to read through that proposal and see how the story actually changed from what was originally proposed to what they finally ended up doing, how the changes went through. It's really cool to see that. I'm glad they included that, and it just makes it that much better of a little novel to read through as a graphic novel. So, you know, props to them on adding those little features in there. Also have to say, rest in peace to Donald J. Sobel. He was the creator of Encyclopedia Brown. I know a lot of us grew up reading those books. Some of us, you know, if we've got kids, are buying those books for our kids to read. So, unfortunately he has passed on and he will be missed. But we do get to say thank you. It is the 100th birthday of air conditioning. For those of us living with record heat going on, we're all appreciating having air conditioning, whether it's a window unit or central air. Particularly living in Florida, it is a necessity. So, happy 100th birthday, air conditioning. I do love thee. Yeah. Marvel has announced that they're going to be investigating the leaks of the Guardians of the Galaxy and Iron Man 3 rumors that had been released prior to San Diego Comic-Con. They've got private investigators looking in on that. Apparently, it really pissed them off that those got leaked out before Comic-Con. They were supposed to make those both those announcements, Guardians of the Galaxy and Iron Man 3, with some photos. And so they're trying to figure out where the leak come from so that they can seal that out, so that they can present stuff at San Diego Comic-Con that's first for the fans there, and then let it trickle out to the media that are covering, through the media that are covering the event, or the fans that are there and posting about it, and then present it out. It just makes something special for them to present. And it's one of the reasons why Apple has been successful as a company, is they're able to keep their devices on lockdown so that people don't know what to expect. And so when they do have an event, you have to be there to be the first person to hear about it. And I think that's one of the things that Marvel and a lot of other companies are looking to do. So, if you are the leak, watch your back. The Science Channel has announced that they're going to be doing a 10th anniversary special for Firefly. The Science Channel has been airing the show in reruns, and they also hosted the panel at San Diego Comic-Con, which they're now planning on doing a special for the 10th anniversary of the Firefly that should air November or December this year. So for all you Firefly fans, check that out. Also, the Firefly panel in its entirety is available online. Search YouTube for San Diego Comic-Con Firefly. There's some really interesting comments in there. And Josh just talks about how special it is to have fans that 10 years later are still wanting more of the work. And you get to hear an example of what a radio play would sound like if Firefly were a radio play. In real world news, a 12-year-old has caught the real world supervillain Rex Velvet. Rex Velvet, we've talked about or mentioned on the podcast before, and I know I've posted about him on our Google Plus page. He is the supervillain that has risen in Seattle to take on the real life superhero community that's there. So apparently, it took a 12-year-old with the help of the Make-A-Wish Foundation to capture him. The 12-year-old found clues and followed them to discover that Rex Velvet had kidnapped the Seattle Seahawks mascot. And then with the help of local police departments, he took to the air in a helicopter to do a search. And eventually, armed with his friends and some silly string, they captured Rex Velvet and brought him to justice. But as we know with all supervillains, they escape from prison and go to wreak havoc. So, all you real-life Seattle superheroes had better watch out. But Make-A-Wish Foundation did that for a kid, so it's good to see Make-A-Wish Foundation and a kid get their dream come true. But that's not all that Make-A-Wish has been up to. They actually got together with Ron Perlman, who went back into his Hellboy makeup for a fan who has life-threatening disease. So Make-A-Wish Foundation was able to get Ron Perlman to get dressed back up as Hellboy and pay a visit. As part of the visit, the kid, you know, of course got his photo taken with Hellboy and also got his own makeup to look like Hellboy. So another memorable experience from the Make-A-Wish Foundation and Ron Perlman, of course, getting to play his role as Hellboy, which, yeah, the fact that they were able to get Ron to do that as opposed to just paying an actor to dress up is really cool. And thank you to Ron Perlman for doing that. In the what can we expect in the future of comics department, Iverse has announced that they're putting together some new tools for digital publishing. It's going to be tools that are going to help creators to publish their books, including as DRM-free content if the creators want it, which is huge. Iverse has been a player, but they're fighting with Comixology and Marvel and DC's own readers to try and put out books. So this is a great way for them to be able to pull talent in directly to them, be able to create and publish to them, as well as to other markets. A lot of creators like the DRM-free release model. If they want DRM, of course, they can put it on there. So if you are a creator and you're interested, you know, this is something to look at. They're also including a crowdsourcing tool, which the interesting part of this is their fee model. They're only going to take 5% up to $2,500. So, yeah, if you are raising money, most of the programs like Kickstarter and Indiegogo, they have a fee. Indiegogo is, I believe it's not 8% if you don't make your goal, and they take 8% of the pledged money and 4% if you do make your goal. Here, they're taking 5%, but only up to $2,500. So if your goal is higher than that, you're only still going to pay Iverse $2,500 because they're not looking to make money off of you and the creators. They're just looking to cover their costs of the servers and the infrastructure needed to keep it running. They want the creators to be making that money to be able to make their products. So if people are making that much money, it's going straight to the creators. So another reason, plus being a comic-centric place, it allows the comic book community to focus in on them, to find them and say, hey, these are books that people want to create. I'm interested in reading them. And so you're not having to go to a place like Kickstarter, where the next project may be a watch or an iPhone stand. Yeah, it centers the comic community in on itself, which may or may not be a good thing. If we get too centered, then people outside the community never see us and they don't get exposure. Somebody that's just flicking through a place like Kickstarter may see a comic book and go, you know what? That's on a topic like time travel that I'm really interested in. So I would read that. So I'm going to go ahead and donate. You won't get that with Iverse, but it will bring a stronger following for the fans that want to read books and are looking for something different to read. Iverse has also got what they're calling Publisher Hub, which is a place that the publishers can actually list all of their information, keep it up to date, so that fans can find out when the next book is going to be released or actually get the book directly from there so that they know what's coming out, when it's coming out, and they know when to expect it. They can all check a central location for that publisher rather than having to go out and try and find information, particularly when a lot of these are crowdfunded and crowdsourced and independents, where you may not be able to find, or they may not even have a website because they're a kid in their basement doing these drawings when they get home from their job. So that should be a big help to some of the publishers to help create it. Madefire, which is a different company, is actually trying to create its own digital comic books out there. They've got their own interesting way of doing it. They've recruited some top talent, including Dave Gibbons from Watchmen, to contribute and make comic books. What they're looking at doing is, instead of just doing a comic book, they're actually looking at doing sequences. And a sequence could include different layers of art that are that layer one on top of the other, so that you see a scene and then you see what it would look like in a second later with the next level. So they're not actually going to have panels, where normally you read panels left to right. And, you know, once you've read the panel, you go on, you read the panel on the left, and you read the panel on the right, and you go down and read the panel on the left and the right. This, it gives you the sequence, and you just read through it. And it's almost as if everything is a full screen on your e-reader, and it just shows you as it should be presented. It doesn't give you a full comic page. There also gives you the option of adding in sound effects and music, so it'll be interesting to see how this plays out, to see if people are going to take advantage of the Madefire platform. And if they do, wonderful. We could get some interesting comics coming out of here. But it's going to be interesting to see if the creators actually are truly interested in using this platform, or if it's, you know, too far, if they just want to be able to create a traditional comic book page and let you either guide it through it from panel to panel, or pinch and zoom to the parts that you want to get a closer look at, which is what's currently out there. So I suspect Madefire is where comic books are going to head. Whether it's going to be on the Madefire platform or not is another story. The other interesting thing about this is, you know, with all these different platforms coming out, are they going to be able to survive, or are the current publishers going to be able to survive, or they're going to have, or are they going to lose out in the entire paradigm shift of going to digital? Because I think as much as comic book fans love their physical media of having a comic in their hand, the convenience, the fact of the additions that can be added to a digital comic book real easily, and particularly as they have to decide between doing a traditional comic page or something like Mediafire is doing with a sequence, it's going to make it more difficult, I think, as people try and decide that they're liking formats like Madefire, or even Comixology, where they go through and they create a guided tour of which panel of showing you the whole page and then panel by panel which one, what you should be reading. So the traditional publishers definitely have their work cut out for them in being able to keep up with these digital content out there. Are they going to, it may be that Madefire gets bought up by one of the larger companies to be used as their platform, and how that will affect their print comics. Are they just going to do each layer in a sequence is a different panel in the actual printed version? There are certainly ways that this can be put together. But it'll be interesting to see where it goes. And, to some extent, companies like Madefire or Iverse are already in the lead over companies like Marvel and DC, who are just putting out digital scans of their current hard copy comic books. So that's going to be an interesting thing to see where the digital is going to go. And I think these digital companies, if they don't get bought out by the current big two, or even three or four, that they're going to be the ones leading the charge and getting, and eventually we may actually see DC or Marvel fold because they can't compete with the digital programs that are out there. The other thing is it could completely fracture the comic book market, in which case I've got five different apps to be able to read all the comics that I want, because I can get Marvel, DC, and Image on Comixology, but I've got a couple of indies on Madefire that I want, and I've got a couple of indies on Iverse that I'm reading. So I've got to try and figure out, okay, I was reading this, which program is it in? Where can I get it? And that fracturing is a problem as well. So yeah, it's kind of sad to say I'd like a monopoly, because I think competition is good, but really what we need is a couple of different companies that are big enough to encompass all, kind of like you can get your cable from Time Warner, or you can get your cable from Verizon, and you still can get Discovery Channel, HBO, History Channel, your local channels. They're all offered on both of them. I can choose which one I want based on which one I feel has better customer service or better picture quality. Now, when the digital reaches that point, then it will be really good for the consumer. But until then, if I've got to choose between watching History Channel on Time Warner or watching Discovery Channel on Bright House, I've either got to buy both, which thankfully a lot of these, the apps are free to the customers. It's just the book that you're buying that you've got to pay for. but it's still frustrating to have to go, okay, was it on Madefire or was it on Iverse that I've got to go pick up my book? Because I want to read that, but I don't remember. Yeah. And I've got to download it before I get on the plane, otherwise. So it'll get frustrating, particularly if you've got a large library on either side that you want to try and download before you're able to get onto a plane or go up to the cabin in the woods where you're going to be away from everything except for the guy with the chainsaw. And just want to read your comic books where you got to download it first. So. All right. Moving on to another product about crowdsourcing, and that's that Penny Arcade, the webcomic, is looking to go ad-free. And the way they're going to do that is by running a Kickstarter. So you can go ahead and check out Kickstarter.com and find the Penny Arcade. They want to get rid of all of the ads. That means they don't have to worry about page views. They can put up the stuff that they want to put up, which means other more interesting content than they're able to put up right now because they need to make sure that they're getting views. People don't want to pay for a site that may or may not get stuff. That's why a lot of companies don't experiment, is because go with what's tried and true. We know we can get the numbers that keep the advertisers happy. This could also mean that you get RSS feeds with full comics and posts in them instead of just partials, which make you go, oh, this was interesting. I want to read the rest. Now I've got to go to the site to read it. And it'll also allow them to enable and even encourage third parties to make apps, or even they can develop their own apps for your smart devices, whether it's your phone, your tablet, different things, you know, the desktop reader on your computer that will automatically download. So you've got it as your background or something. Yeah. All of that they can do now because they don't have to worry about you actually going to the site in order to make the payments, because they're waiting on page views and showing analytics to their vendors who are paying for the advertising. This way, it's all completely covered by the readers of Penny Arcade or the people that are willing to make a donation to the Kickstarter. So if that sounds like something you're interested in, or if you just are interested in seeing what Penny Arcade is about, you know, pennyarcade.com, or head over to Kickstarter and do a search for Penny Arcade, and you can find out more information there. For those of you that are cartoon fans, particularly those of Perry the Platypus, Agent P, his friends Phineas and Ferb, the Marvel superheroes in the 2013 season will be making a guest appearance on Phineas and Ferb. So for those of you that enjoy your platypi or want to see your Marvel heroes and more things, this is Phineas and Ferb is a Disney cartoon. Disney, of course, now owns Marvel Comics, so you're going to get to see the Marvel heroes in there. Two other crowdsourcing announcements, which probably should have bumped us up above that Phineas and Ferb comment, but these go to the video game, so I kind of wish Justin was here to talk about this. The first is that Valve is actually going to be crowdsourcing the information of which games it should be distributing. It's going to have a list of potential games that you'll be able to go through a thing called Greenlight and say, yes, this is a game I'll play. No, it's not. If they get enough upvotes for a game, it'll go to their board where they'll review it and decide if it is something that they want to distribute through Steam or not. So it's a great way for them to find out what things people are actually interested in that maybe they would have passed over if it was just their board deciding. They still get the final say on what they're going to distribute, but at least this way you've got the opportunity to get a game or a lesser known game put up there to say, hey, this is something that we'd be interested in. The other thing is, for those of you that run Ubuntu, Steam will be available for Ubuntu now, for your favorite Linux distribution, should you decide to go that way. And lastly, that's not me cheering, that's actually the name of the $99 Android gaming console, the Ouya, I believe that's how they pronounce it, Ouya. So the Ouya, is running a Kickstarter again. You can go to Kickstarter and search for the Ouya Android gaming device. It's a set-top box with a controller that connects to your TV. It runs Android and allows you to play games. It's fully, they say right out of the box, it's fully hackable. Also, there's going to be a lot of interesting things that they're going to be able to do with this. If somebody wanted to, they could, in theory, put Google TV on it. They're going to be able to put in your own apps for watching things like Netflix and Hulu, as well as playing video games. And, you know, for $99, you know, that's a, you know, a lot cheaper than something like the Xbox or PlayStation, particularly the next gens that are coming out. So that might be some, that may be the next thing in console gaming, is somewhere right in between that console and the, you know, home computer for PC gaming. There's a huge thing between console gamers and PC gamers as to which one's better right now. PC is winning and we're waiting for the next gen of consoles to come out. Oh, yay. Maybe that intermediate step that says, you know, we give you the flexibility of PC gaming with the controls and the feel of a console. So interesting to see if that comes out. Be interesting to see, hear what Justin has to say, since he's the true gamer of the two of us. And, don't forget he's going to be posting his counterpoints to this, covering whatever he feels relevant or that I didn't cover sufficiently. And he'll be posting that, so don't forget to check the feed later to see what, once he's gotten that posted, head over to thecomicbooknerd.com to find not only his counterpoint, but other posts about comic books, what's coming out, reviews, and, just comic book lifestyle. All of our contact information can be found at about.me/comicbooktesseract. That's got our emails, so you can contact us, Twitter accounts, if you want to follow us on Twitter and hear what mindless things we have to say, if we say anything at all. Our Facebook page is listed there. Our Google Plus feed is listed there. And, of course, our phone number, so you can call and leave us a voicemail or send us a text message. All that's available at about.me/comicbooktesseract. I'm Jason Poliev, and I'll see you next week when we step inside the Tesseract.